All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am previewing the storylines and battles centering on the Falcons wide receiver position heading into training camp.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet. Of course, FalFans on Twitter, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. So today, we're going to be previewing the wide receiver position. We're going to be talking about the battles. Even though this is a large position group, as you can guess, the real big topic of this group is going to be the development of Calvin Ridley. And so that's going to be the main thing to keep your eye on, the main storyline. Obviously, the whole Julio Jones drama and holdout situation has created a nice little side quest, a nice little side story as far as stories go entering training camp. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But let's talk about Calvin Ridley. And before we really jump headfirst into discussing Calvin Ridley, let's revisit a topic or a thing I talked about 2 days ago when I talked about the fullback position, only podcast that devotes an entire episode to the fullback. One of the things that I brought up in that show was sort of how the Falcons would sort of divvy up the reps among the fullback position and whether or not it would lead to, you know, them seeing increased reps in the summer and then maybe decreased reps in the fall. And one of the things that sort of brought up on that show was the idea that the Falcons would be moving away from this sort of fullback-centric offense, given sort of the question marks at that position, and going much more to another personnel grouping as sort of their base offense. And we saw a little bit of that moving in that direction last year with the three wide receiver sets. But I do wonder now this year, given the decisions that the Falcons have made at both fullback and tight end position we talked about in yesterday's episode, with replacing Laveen Toilolo for a more unproven commodity like Logan Paulson, although albeit much cheaper, are the Falcons planning on in really embracing the three wide receiver set? You know, I think they were the team that used 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, like the eighth or ninth lowest in the league last year. Is that number going to increase where we're going to be talking about them using it as like, probably not the eighth or ninth highest, but, you know, maybe like 14th or something like that. So that to me is going to be a big question. I think a big part of that is going to be how quickly does Calvin Ridley develop? I think if the Falcons open the season and we are looking at a situation where Justin Hardy is wide receiver 3A and Ridley is a wide receiver 3B, I don't expect the Falcons to really throw a ton of 11 personnel at teams constantly all the time. And but if Ridley can sort of show his ability to sort of assimilate quickly in this offense, then I do see the Falcons at least should, you know, you never know with Sark. At least on paper, the Falcons should be a team that's, you know, features a lot of three wide receiver, a lot of shotgun, be much more akin to this type of offense that we readily saw under Dirk Cutter and the like, rather than what Kyle Shanahan was producing in 2015 and 2016. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see and see if that develops. Certainly, I'm sure we will be talking about that later in the fall and whatnot. But we'll see how it plays out. You know, with Ridley, it's going to be interesting because, you know, I've heard some people talk about, oh, is Ridley going to be pushing Sanu for that number two job? Like, no, he's not. You know, technically, Sanu is going to be the starter. And I think really what the Falcons are hoping for, whether it's this year or in future years, is for Ridley to emerge as not necessarily the number two receiver, but the number two option. Much like we saw in 2016 when Taylor Gabriel, while technically was not the starter opposite Julio Jones, was the primary secondary target of Julio Jones, you know, in the Falcons passing game. And that sort of, we saw that develop over the second half of that season. And that was really where the offense really started to click and be this unstoppable juggernaut that we saw throughout the 2016 season. And, you know, I think a lot of what the Falcons are going to be planning on doing is doing their best to sort of facilitate that. And again, what's going to be interesting is if the team is forced to play a lot more 21 personnel during the preseason in order to try to get these fullbacks up to speed, does that limit the amount of reps that a guy like Calvin Ridley is going to get? Or do the Falcons basically say, you know what, Julio, you're going to play one series in all these preseason games, and then we're going to quickly pull the plug on you and put Ridley in the game. And even if we are playing that, you know, 21 fullback-driven offense, you know, Ridley is still going to be out there in the field in a position to make plays. And that'll be curious. So, part of me is, like, wondering, are we going to see a lot of Julio, Sanu, and Ridley in the preseason? At this point in time, I don't think so, but who knows? Again, I'm guessing, really, at this point. But I think that's going to be something that, you know, the Falcons might be saving for the regular season. And I think we'll have to see sort of how the Falcons sort of facilitate Ridley's development. I think one of the interesting nuggets that we'll have to see develop, and for the nerdiest of you guys out there that are really sort of honed in on, you know, depth charts and rosters and whatnot, maybe this you know, is right up your wheelhouse. It's certainly up mine. But for some of you, you're like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. But I will be curious to see what wide receiver position the Falcons do employ Ridley at. You know, Gabriel was technically the backup X wide receiver, which is the backup to Julio Jones. Julio's the X, Sanu's the Z, except when they go three wide, Sanu moves to the Y, which is the slot. And, you know, Gabriel, I guess, is the Z in those circumstances. But so it'll be interesting to see with me, with Ridley, like with Gabriel gone and with Marvin Hall being the top backup X receiver on the roster, I would assume with all the holdouts and whatnot, then Ridley has been getting a lot of work at the X position, which is the obvious hole, immediate hole for the Falcons. But what's going to be interesting is long-term, obviously, with Julio presumably remaining at that X receiver, I don't see any reason why the Falcons would change that at any point in the next 5 years. Then Ridley's future is going to be as that Z wide receiver. And one wonders, how do the Falcons then facilitate his development for that? Or is that something they're just going to hold off till 2019? Or is that something that we're going to start to see this year and sort of get him ready to sort of fill that Gabriel role as a guy that is the primary backup at the X, but also can play some Z as well when the Falcons go three wide? And I do wonder about that. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to sort of see if the Falcons do indeed try to cross-train Ridley at all three wide receiver positions, the X, the Y, and the Z, as opposed to just sticking him at one. I remember back in 2015, the last time we had a promising young rookie wide receiver, no offense, Devin Fuller, but back in 2015 with Justin Hardy, you know, the Falcons almost exclusively played Justin Hardy at that Z position rather than playing him at the Y position, which one assumed going into that summer with Roddy at the Z and Julio at the X that Hardy was going to be the guy at the Y. That wound up being more Leonard Hankerson's job. And Hardy was basically exclusively played at the Z and then sort of sat those first seven games of that season and was inactive and then finally got his action and was playing both the Y and the Z for the second half of that season. Now, I bring that up not because I'm expecting that to be the same case with Ridley, but that is the only precedent that we really have to go off of right now in terms of how the Falcons utilize their young rookie wide receivers. So that's why I'm somewhat curious to sort of see how it's different with Ridley, or maybe there's an off chance that it's not very different with Ridley. So these are sort of the nitty-gritty things of sort of Calvin Ridley's development that I'm curious to see how the Falcons do. Obviously, everybody's going to be focused on how well does he perform, whatever role he's playing. Is he making plays? Is he creating separation? Is he catching the football? Is he doing the things that everybody expects Calvin Ridley to do in this offense? And obviously, that goes without saying, it's going to be a thing to watch. And I look forward to it. I am going to be very curious to see whether or not Ridley sort of hits the ground running or is more typical with a little bit of a slow start and needs some time to get up to speed. That won't prevent him from being able to contribute, but it may prevent him from being a reliable contributor, especially, you know, when you think about what Hardy was those first 7 weeks. Even if you go back to what Julio Jones was early in his career, like, contrary to popular opinion, even though Julio put up this monster production, one of the hallmarks of Julio's rookie season was the fact that he would basically late in games stat pad to a certain extent, where the Falcons would be behind in some of those games or playing from behind, and Julio would be able to get a bunch of catches late in the game. Or there were games where Julio was very quiet for the first, you know, two or three quarters, then would have a big fourth quarter, and that would sort of put the Falcons back in the game or sort of push them ahead. But it wasn't a guy that was sort of consistently being a contributor down in, down out, series in, series out, quarter in, quarter out, and whatnot. And there were certainly, you know, there were certainly some monster games that he had a rookie, don't get me wrong. But I would probably say for about 75% of that season, Julio, I wouldn't say he was a non-factor, but he wasn't anything special. He was just kind of a typical starting NFL wide receiver. Like, he wasn't any better than what Michael Jenkins would have been in that same role. And so I do, with that being in mind, it's going to be interesting to sort of see whether Ridley falls into that same category as a guy that can contribute, but may, you know, for 75% of his rookie season, be sort of an afterthought, so to speak. Sitting here today, I have no idea what the answers are going to be, and we're all going to sit here and find out together, I guess. So that's the main thing I want to say about Calvin Ridley, and sort of the main issue, that the topic that the Falcons are going to be focused on dealing with this summer at the wide receiver position. We'll move on and talk a little bit more about Julio Jones and his potential drama and how that gets resolved in a second. But I want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop shop for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content related to the NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball, your team every day. So the whole issue with Julio's holdout, the assumption I've been under for most of this summer, really since we first got word that Julio, you know, had issues with his contract, was that he would show up for mandatory minicamp and he would show up for training camp. And so, you know, I would have said I was 100% confident, 100% chance Julio's there for camp. But then when he decided to skip mandatory minicamp, there's a little bit of doubt creeping in. Now, I would probably still say there's like a 95% chance that he's there for training camp. But you do have to wonder sort of, you know, how serious he is about getting that quote-unquote updated contract. You know, if he does hold out of camp, that would be very, very strange decision on his part. That means he's very serious, because he's, you know, basically like, I need more money or I'm not going to play this year. That would seem to be very uncharacteristic of the Julio Jones that we've come to know and love over the last 8 years. So I don't expect that to happen, but I will admit that there is a little sliver of doubt in my mind, more so than there was, say, 6 weeks ago, when I would have said, no, there's absolutely no chance that Julio misses training camp. So I think that's really where I'll leave it with the Julio situation. I guess the positive is, if he does, for whatever reason, decide to skip training camp, then that opens the door for more opportunities for a player like Calvin Ridley, who I'm assuming would take almost all of Julio's reps in his absence, reps that he would get with the starters that he may not normally get if Julio was there. And particularly given Julio, you know, needing to play a little bit of catch up with the rest of the team. But we'll see how that gets resolved. Again, I don't think it's going to be a big deal, but I do wonder about that. And I think ultimately with the Julio situation, you know, my expectation all along has been that ultimately it would get resolved in the same way that the Antonio Brown situation, which I've outlined in multiple times on this podcast over the last month or two, which is basically the Falcons take some of his future money, turn it into signing bonus, and he gets a slight pay raise in terms of how much money he makes this year, with very minimal impact on the Falcons cap. And so that, to me, as far as I'm concerned, makes the most sense. It doesn't really sort of set a weird precedent that you now have to feel compelled to follow in the future, because it's just like a minor adjustment to a contract that you can choose not to make, as opposed to if you give him a brand new contract, then all of a sudden now you've set a precedent. You know, I think the interesting thing about this Julio situation, I guess I'll talk about it a little bit more for the third time on this podcast, three times too many if you ask me, but I think too often this argument has been framed about whether Julio should get paid or Julio shouldn't get paid, which I think is the wrong way of framing it. Like, Julio should get all the money that he can get. That's what should happen. And the team should be able to limit how much money they should be able to pay. You know, that's sort of how it works. It's, you know, so it's one of those things where, like, I'm not necessarily saying that the Falcons shouldn't pay Julio Jones. I think Julio should be paid. But at the same time, I don't think as an organization, putting yourself in the Falcons' shoes, that you're going to want to set that weird precedent. So that's part of the reason why I haven't really sort of taken this whole thing as seriously as other people, because I thought my expectation has always been that the fix for this is pretty simple. It's pretty simple. Okay, Julio, how much money do you want? Would $2 more million make you happy? Would $3 more million make you happy? Okay, you want five? Okay, well, let's compromise and let's go 3.5. Okay, okay, let's settle on 4 or whatever. You know, like, to me, it's not that complicated an issue. Maybe I've been sort of living. I guess that's what this whole conversation I've been having for the last, you know, 8 minutes is, maybe I am living a little bit under the rock. Maybe I'm being a little bit naive in this regard. And so I guess right now, sitting here today, a month ahead of training camp starting, this is a legitimate question, and whether or not this is going to be a storyline as we get into summer. But I think it's one of those storylines that shouldn't be a big issue, but maybe I just have a completely wrong assessment of it. So there you go. And we'll wrap things up in a bit, talking about the rest of the wide receiver position in those competitions. But I do want to plug Locked On Hawks, hosted by Brad Rowland. And he's breaking down the NBA draft and upcoming free agency moves. Go check out him and a whole host of NBA shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about the rest of the depth. Well, we know, like, Julio, Sanu, and Ridley are all pretty much secure in their spots. It's just a matter of, it's really a matter of how much do we see the three wide receiver sets and how effective is it with Ridley in tow. Is really sort of the big storyline, as I said at the top of the show. But we will see some battles for the rest of the spot. I do think Justin Hardy's spot as the fourth receiver is pretty secure. I will be curious to sort of see what type of season Justin Hardy has this year. I have a soft spot for Justin Hardy. I feel like he's been a victim of circumstance here in Atlanta due to, and it's part of the reason why I'm, you know, it's reason number 412, why I'm not a huge fan of Mohamed Sanu, because I feel like by bringing in Mohamed Sanu, it essentially prevented the Falcons from being able to get the most out of Justin Hardy, who I believe, had the Falcons continued to develop him over the last two seasons, would have reached a point maybe this year or in those years to a level comparable to what Mohamed Sanu is bringing to the table. And I just feel like that's a missed opportunity. And I wonder if he will get that opportunity, whether it's here in Atlanta in the future or elsewhere, because this year, 2018, is going to be the final year of his contract. So that is something I am worried about. But as far as Hardy goes in the summertime, I expect Justin Hardy to do his thing, to continue to be the hardworking team-first guy that he's been since day one. And, you know, whether that pays off in a very favorable way, I, you know, again, part of my skepticism of Sarkisian makes me skeptical of his ability to integrate all the components of the offense into one sort of cohesive, magnificent ball. But that's, you know, that's more of a Sark issue than a Hardy issue. I think for the fifth wide receiver spot, Russell Gage should be sort of secure in that role, similar to what we saw in the past years when Eric Weems was the fifth wide receiver on the roster, when factoring in the active versus inactive group, because five receivers are active and Eric Weems was almost always that fifth guy whenever healthy, and that's primarily due to his special teams ability. I think, you know, we talked about this on Russell Gage's Scouting Report episode, fully expect Russell Gage to be the gunner opposite Justin Bethel on punt coverage, as well as being a major contributor on kickoff coverage. I don't expect Russell Gage to carve out a significant role on offense, and we'll have to see if he makes major contributions in that regard. You know, as I said in that scouting report episode, I think as a wide receiver prospect, he's no better than in a typical, you know, undrafted free agent. I think some of the guys that I'll talk about in a bit are, at least from their offensive potential standpoint and in terms of the developmental potential to get a return on that investment sooner rather than later. It's not to say that I don't think you can develop Russell Gage. I should be clear about that. I just think the timetable it would take to get him to a level where you'd be happy with him, which is probably as a fourth wide receiver, is just going to take longer than what's worthwhile for a team to invest in. But obviously the Falcons are going to invest in him. So if he, as I said in that scouting report, if he plays well on special teams, he will be able to stick long enough to get that sort of development at the wide receiver position. But yeah, so what I'm saying with Gage in terms of his offensive potential, I'm not expecting a whole lot. Hopefully he has a couple of highlight reels. Hopefully he can do something, maybe question, maybe I'm lower on his offensive potential than I should be. You know, I'll look forward to seeing that, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that. I think the sixth spot is the real position that's really up for grabs this summer, but I don't think it's, you know, I think Marvin Hall is a clear front runner at that spot, but he's by no means a slam dunk. I think it's going to be interesting to sort of see where Hall is this summer, given that he was one of the standouts last summer, in my opinion, as well as a guy that caught the eye of the coaching staff. You know, it was notable to me in that first preseason game when it was Marvin Hall that started opposite Mohamed Sanu at the wide receiver position when both Julio and Gabriel were out with injury. And I think, you know, what's interesting with Hall and what happened during the regular season was after that, you know, he basically stopped getting, I think he was inactive for the rest of the season after that Saints game where the infamous butt interception occurred. And it seemed to me that it was clear that he was in the Falcons coaching staff's doghouse after that point, probably related to that play, despite the fact that I think, you know, he had been performing pretty regularly since, you know, week 10, week or so, as one of the gunners on punt coverage, replacing Justin Hardy, and around that Seahawk game, I think it was, permanently. He had dabbled at times prior to that, but and he was doing a pretty good job in that role. And then what was fascinating was down the stretch, in particular in the playoffs, the Falcons' play at that gunner position was pretty atrocious, and yet the Falcons still kept Hall on the bench. And that was sort of interesting to me, and it stands out to me. It's like, okay, maybe the coaching staff, maybe something was going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, and we shouldn't even try to speculate about that, sort of got the coaching staff down on him or whatever. Who knows at this point? But I raise that point in terms of him being in the doghouse and looking this summer to see if he can sort of climb out of it if he was stuck in there, because I recall thinking a very similar thing back in 2009 going into that summer where Brent Grimes had been benched the previous year. And sort of ended that season, I think, like on the last five games of the regular season, he was inactive, and thinking, oh, the Falcons, you know, they drafted Chris Owens. They're ready to move on from, you know, they got Chevis Jackson, they got Von Hutchins or whoever the heck was the other cornerback besides Chris Houston. You know, they got all these guys, and Brent Grimes is going to be a goner, you know. And he's in the doghouse. And then, of course, Grimes wound up winning the starting job that year. Had 2010 and 2011 were two of the best years a Falcons cornerback has had, and certainly in my memory, and that goes back, you know, 15, 20 years. So, you know, you look at that, and you can come back from it, I guess, is the moral of the story. And Grimes was able to come back to it and turn it, still going relatively strong in the NFL, you know, a decade later, pretty much. And one wonders whether Marvin Hall is going to do that. Not to suggest that he's going to turn into Brent Grimes and be a future Pro Bowl wide receiver, but has the possibility of at least carving out a role as at the very least, a solid backup or journeyman type of wide receiver in the future. And so that's going to be an interesting story to follow with Marvin Hall. And, you know, whatever happened in December happened in December. And certainly what's going to be important now is going to be what happens in this upcoming August. I do think if anybody's really going to push Hall for that sixth spot, I think Reggie Davis is the obvious choice. He spent last year on the practice squad. I think he checks a lot of the same boxes that Marvin Hall does. I think where Hall sort of shines and why I give him the edge, despite some possible question marks, is I think Hall has, you know, proved himself last summer on special teams as a returner. He also proved himself in the regular season covering kicks. And I think he was certainly proved himself to be a polished and explosive receiver that has good route running skills and good ball skills. Obviously, they weren't as consistent, but, you know, oh my God, young wide receivers are inconsistent. Such a surprise. But I do think Reggie Davis checks many of those same boxes. We saw his return skills last summer. We saw his explosiveness, particularly with the ball in his hands and his ability after the catch. I don't think he's as polished a route runner. I don't think he's got quite the ball skills or the size that Hall has, even though Hall's not a big guy, but he's at least sturdier. Reggie Davis is like 178 pounds soaking wet or something like that. We'll see if he's bulked up. Maybe he has. But I do think, you know, we saw some of the positives of him covering kicks in the return game last summer. So I do feel like he's not that far behind. He wasn't that far behind Marvin Hall at the end of last year's training camp. And because of whatever issues Marvin Hall might have had last year, and basically there's an opportunity for Reggie Davis to sort of leapfrog him this summer if he's put in all the work over the last 12 months that, you know, he's certainly capable of doing. And so that's going to be another thing to keep an eye on. I think he can certainly push for that job in a lot of ways and be the designated jet sweeper that, you know, Sark needs to have in his offense. I think with the sort of the undrafted free agents, I think most of these guys are really pushing for time in as a practice squad guy. I think there is a very, very, very outside chance that maybe one of these guys, given the right circumstances, could make the roster as the sixth wide receiver. You know, if one of these guys winds up proving to be the next Victor Cruz, then we can have a conversation with that. I bring up Victor Cruz just because he's the prominent example that sticks out in my mind as an undrafted rookie receiver that sort of shines and then goes on to have success fairly early in his NFL career. You know, those guys don't grow in trees. You know, Wes Welker is another example. You can name examples. There's more wide receivers that guys that become wide receivers like that than there are for most other positions, but it's not necessarily a common thing. And we'll see how it goes. You know, I think of that group, the guys that I will name as the guys to keep your eyes on that I've mentioned on previous episodes devoted to the undrafted free agents are Dontez Byrd from Tennessee Tech, Devin Gray from Cincinnati, and Christian Blake from Northern Illinois. Those three seem to be the best of that group. We'll see if Taj Williams or Lamar Jordan can make an impact. Those guys do bring something to the table, so it's not as if they're devoid of the group, but I think the other three sort of stand out a little bit better, at least in terms of what they bring, potentially, particularly Byrd. But I think most, for the most part, you could see one or two of those guys make the practice squad. I think what's going to hurt some of those guys is some of those guys really could make a legitimate bid for the roster if they could get the opportunity to show off their return skills. But it doesn't seem like, based off of the reports that were coming out of minicamp earlier this summer, that the Falcons are overly interested in any one of those guys winning the return job. And when we get to the special teams breakdown in many, many days from now, I will explain further what I mean by that. But I think, you know, we'll have to see if any of these guys stand out. And the last thing I'll leave us off with before we duck out of here is let's talk about Devin Fuller. I find it interesting because no official NFL transaction has ever shown that Devin Fuller has been released. You know, we had D-Led say a couple of weeks ago that he's not on the roster. The Falcons haven't included him on their official roster on their website in months, probably since, like, I don't know, August or something like that. But what's interesting about Devin Fuller, according to official transactions, last year when he was cut, he wasn't really cut. He was waived with an injured designation. And for those of you who don't know, what happens is if you basically, if a player gets hurt at a certain point during the summer, early in training camp, you have to sort of expose them to waivers. There's rules about it, and I'm just glossing over the rules. But basically, you waive a guy. If he clears waivers, then he goes on IR for you. If someone claims him, then he goes to the other team. I think the Patriots are the only team that I can think of that have ever actually claimed a guy that was waived injured. In recent memory, it was a tight end. I can't remember who it was. But anyway, I want to say it was a tight end that played for the Browns. I can't think of who it was. Not Gary Barnett or Jordan Cameron, but it was somebody else who was a talented tight end, had one big year, and then fell off the face of the cliff. Anyway, doesn't matter. but, like, the Falcons waived Devin Fuller with an injury designation due to his torn ACL. He went on IR because he cleared waivers. And as far as I know, the official transactions, he was still on the Falcons' injured reserve list at the end of last season. And what's weird about it is, you know, until the Falcons signed Ron Parker, they had 89 players on the roster. They added Ron Parker. But what's interesting is you go to the NFLPA website who has the salary cap data, and they list sort of what is the officially, I guess unofficially, the official salary cap numbers. They still have 91 guys on the Falcons, counting towards the Falcons roster, even, you know. So I do wonder about that. Like, is he on the team? I mean, you know, at this point in time, I'm assuming he's not. There has been no indicator that he's on the team. But it would be weird if there's, like, two number 13s that show up in training camp or something like that. I don't know. It's weird. It's baffling to me sort of when and where he got cut, because it was only, like, in the last month or so that I think he removed the Falcons from his Twitter bio, which could mean absolutely nothing. He just forgot about it until someone said something to him. You know, I forget half the things in my Twitter bio. But I don't know. I don't know. That whole Devin Fuller situation is weird to me, because it seems like there are many, many indicators that the Falcons, he still counts. He's still officially part of the roster. And outside of D-Led and the official website, it's, you know, maybe it's a clerical error on the NFL. You know, all the official transactions sites that you can go to, whether that's NFL.com, FoxSports.com is the main one I use. Who knows at this point? I'm rambling at this point. I don't really have anything else to say. It's weird to me. That's all I'm saying. Let me just say weird one more time. Weird. All right, guys, that's it. We'll be talking more offensive linemen in the future next week. That will be definitely on the docket. I think we'll also do D-line as well next week. But we might also be doing, if everything goes according to plan, we might be doing some NFC South previews. So you can look forward to that perhaps on the next episode on Monday. Who knows? I don't know. I'm keeping it mysterious. But until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.